In putting this together today, this is the only slide you'll see. There is no PowerPoint. It's the Torah portion of Vayetze. It means, and he left. And it's very interesting. Sometimes you want to come up with something that's amazing and these amazing correlations between the meanings of words and the revelation and the Brit Hadashah or the New Testament. And sometimes you can just be all week and into the night before just trying to make it work about the stone that Jacob set up and anointed and the stone that Yeshua called Peter. And sometimes it just doesn't work. Sometimes it's easy to trust in PowerPoints and graphics, and sometimes you just can't. Sometimes Yahweh has a way of just really keeping you completely dependent on Him, not knowing what in the world He wants to share until about 8:30 or 9 in the morning before you're going to share it. And that's what happened. The Torah portion is Genesis 28 through 32, and it's about Jacob, from the time that he left home to the time that he returned home. And I want to pick out a few verses and read them, starting in Genesis 28, 3 through 4. Now, as Rick shared, I believe last week or the week before, Jacob was a man of the tents, and he was probably a rather smart guy. He probably had a lot on the ball, knew about the birthright, knew about inheritances, where that might have been taking advantage of Esau, who maybe didn't know as much. And in 28, 3 through 4, I'm just going to read these. This is Isaac blessing him and telling him to go. 3, and El Shaddai bless you and make you bear fruit and increase you. And you shall become an assembly of peoples and give you the blessing of Abraham to you and your seed with you, so that you inherit the land of your sojournings, which Elohim gave to Abraham. I don't really see that Jacob really had that much of a relationship with Yahweh, but his father was definitely committed. And I think that's one of the most important things about our command, or the commands to, for fathers to teach their kids, because the kids may not necessarily be experiencing much of a relationship until Yahweh meets with them. Look at 28:10 through 22. And Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. And he came upon a place and stopped over for the night, for the sun had set. And he took one of the stones of that place and put it at his head. And he lay down in that place to sleep. And he dreamed and saw a ladder set up on the earth, and its top reached to the heavens, and saw messengers of Elohim going up and coming down on it. And see, Yahweh stood above it and said, I am Yahweh, Elohim of Abraham, your father, and the Elohim of Yitzhak. The land on which you are lying, I give it to you and your seed. And your seed shall be as the dust of the earth, and you shall break forth to the west and to the east, to the north, to the south, and all the clans of the earth shall be blessed in you and in your seed. And see, I am with you, and shall guard you wherever you go, and shall bring you back to this land. For I am not going to leave you until I have done what I have spoken to you. And Jacob awoke from his sleep and said, truly, Yahweh is in this place, and I did not know it. And he was afraid and said, how awesome is this place! There is none other than the house of Elohim. This is the gate to the heavens. And Jacob rose early in the morning and took the stone that he had put at his head and set it up as a standing column and poured oil on top of it. And he called the name of that place Bethel. However, the name of that city had been Luz previously. By the way, Bethel is house of El, or house of God. And Luz previously meant almond tree, or almond wood. 20, and Yaakov made a vow, saying, seeing Elohim is with me, and has kept me in this way that I'm going, and has given me bread to eat and a garment to put on, when I have returned to my father's house in peace, and Yahweh has been my Elohim, then this stone which I have set as a standing column, shall be Elohim's house. And of all that you give me, I shall certainly give a tenth to you. What's very interesting to me is that even though this guy was probably a relatively smart guy and had a lot that he could depend on from Isaac's, his father's blessing, you're going to be this amazing thing, you're going to change the world, bless the whole world, you're going to have descendants and everything else, he probably had a lot of pride or trust or flesh to trust in. And yet, he was brought to a point of just complete, it says he was afraid after seeing Yahweh in this place. And it's probably the first place that Yahweh really initiated with him personally, and he had, for the first time, a personal experience with Yahweh. And the fact that he went out and slept with his head on a stone is an indication that he just didn't have anything. He didn't have a tent. He didn't have whatever they have in tents to feel more comfortable. He just was down and out, desperate, dependent, probably a little scared, heading out. He was running from his brother Esau, who was had said, "I'm going to kill him. I'm going to kill him," Esau said, "as soon as I get a chance. As soon as we're finished mourning for my father, he's dead." And his mother heard that and said, "Listen, you're going to have to get out of here. I'm going to send you to my brother Laban up in Paddan Aram, which is essentially Syria nowadays. It's way up north of Israel." And Jacob was a little desperate. And what occurs to me here is that he has this experience, and Yahweh says, "I'm going to be with you. I'm going to stay with you. I'm going to promise you these things. Don't worry, I'm with you." And that's Bethel. He names it Bethel, and he sets up a monument. Let's fast forward 21 years. He's been with Laban. He's had 11 sons and one daughter, Dinah. And if we look at Genesis 30, 43, just one verse here, he became very wealthy. "Thus the man increased very much and had many flocks and female and male servants and camels and donkeys." Probably tempting to be a little bit dependent on those things. Again, when you become wealthy, it's easy to rest in your wealth. Look at 31, 1 through 3. "And he heard the words of Laban's son, saying, 'Jacob has taken away all that was our father's, and from what belonged to our father, he has made all this wealth.' And Jacob would look at the face of Laban and see that it was not toward him as before. And Yahweh said to Jacob, 'Return to the land of your fathers and to your relatives, and I am with you.'" It was getting a little scary there. In the same way that it was scary with Esau, it's gotten a little scary with Laban. His sons had been slandering to their father, and Jacob could tell from the look on Laban's face that Laban was probably thinking, "You know, I've lost everything. This guy has all the wealth. If something should have happened to that guy, I would have all that wealth again." Just maybe. So Jacob was told by Yahweh to return to Bethel. And look down at 11, where he's explaining this to his wives. "And the messenger of Elohim spoke to me in a dream, saying, 'Yaakov,' and I said, 'Here I am.' And he said, 'Lift your eyes now and see all the rams which leap on the flocks, the streaked, the speckled, mottled. For I have seen all that Laban is doing to you. I am the El of Bethel, where you anointed the standing column, where you made a vow to me." Like, remember me in all your wealth? Because we haven't heard of his relationship with Yahweh here for most of these 21 years. "Now rise up, get out of this land, and return to the land of your relatives." So here we have this, "Remember me and all your wealth and all your comfort and all your sons, daughters, manservants, maidservants, camels and donkeys and everything else. Return. Return to the land. Return to me. I'm the God of Bethel," where this happened. Look at Genesis 32 now. He's almost home, and he's very afraid of approaching Esau, who wanted to kill him, but it's been a few years. 32:3-5. And Yaakov sent messengers before him to Esau, his brother, in the land of Seir, the field of Edom. And he commanded them, saying, "Say this to my master Esau, your servant Jacob said this, 'I have sojourned with Laban and stayed there until now. I have bulls, donkeys, flocks, male and female servants, and I've sent to inform my master to find favor in your eyes.'" Stop there for a sec. What does it look like he's basically trusting in to smooth this relationship over again? All these riches, all this wealth. Look at 6 and 7. "So the messengers returned to Yaakov, saying, 'We came to your brother Esau, and he's also coming to meet you, and has 400 men with him.' And Yaakov was greatly afraid and distressed." Ooh, both. "So he divided the people that were with him, and the flocks and herds and camels, into two groups." As if that's a prophecy about the two houses of Israel later. But the main thing is that sending all of the, telling Esau that we're going to have all this wealth for you, I have all these things, I have all this stuff, look what I got, didn't work. Esau had 400 men, an army, probably. And so Jacob became very afraid, very distressed, because what he was trusting in isn't going to work, and he has nothing else. He is at the end of his rope again. Sometimes that's just where Yahweh wants us. Look at, a little forward to 32:22-29. "And he rose up that night." Is that where I want to be? Yeah. "He rose up that night and took his two wives and his two female servants and his 11 sons and passed over the ford of Yabbok. And he took them and sent them over the stream and sent over what he had, all of it. I'm going to place it all on this square. And Yaakov was left alone. And a man wrestled with him until the breaking of day. And when he saw that he did not overcome him, he touched the socket of his hip. And the socket of Jacob's hip was dislocated as he wrestled with him." In a way here, I'm thinking that, you know, if you're wrestling a messenger of Yahweh, you don't really have that much of a chance of winning unless Yahweh is intending you to sort of win. Either he wants to give you a little confidence or make some other point. But then we see that the messenger touches his hip. Ah, knocks out. Don't forget who you're messing with here, in a way. "And he said, 'Let me go,'" in verse 26, "'for the day breaks.'" So Jacob was still hanging on to him. "And the messenger said, 'Let me go, for the day breaks.' And Jacob, 'Boy, I am not letting you go until you have blessed me.' So he asked him, 'What is your name?' And he said, 'Yaakov.' And he says, 'Your name is no longer Yaakov, but Yisrael, because you have striven with Elohim and with men and have overcome.'" Yisrael means striving with God, or struggle with El, Yisrael. Down in 33 here, verse 2 and 3. "And he put the female servants..." It's interesting that before he put everything he had there and he stayed behind. Now look at 2 and 3. "And he put the female servants and their children in front, and Leah and her children behind, and Rachel and Yosef last. And he himself passed over before them and bowed himself to the ground 7 times until he came near to his brother." Now, what's interesting here is that he's not defending himself with anything anymore. I think he's broken to the point of he knows he can't even fight. He's limping. He's in pain. And yet, he's going first. Now what is he trusting in? I think something really happened there to where he's trusting completely in Yahweh and not in any of the riches, not in anything else, not in gifts, not in bribes, just completely, I'm going first. And look at this next verse, verse 4. "And Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept." Yahweh completely, miraculously delivered him. By whatever he was doing in Esau's life, he brought it to a decent outcome here. This is a little out of the Torah portion, a little ahead, but it's another example of this in 35, 1 through 7. And Elohim said to Yaakov, "Arise, go up to Bethel and dwell there." I want you to go back to Bethel. Remember me? Remember who you were there, desperate, broken, and all that? Go back. "And make an altar there to El, who appeared to you when you fled from the face of your Esau, your brother." And Yaakov said to his household and to all who were with him, "Put away the foreign mighty ones that are among you, cleanse yourselves, change your garments, and let us arise and go up to Bethel." We'll look at the respect for Yahweh now. "And let me make there an altar to El, who answered me in the day of my distress and has been with me in the way which I have gone." So they gave Jacob all the foreign mighty ones that were in their hands and all their earrings, which their ears. And Jacob hid them under the terebinth tree, which was near Shechem. Verse 5, "And they departed, and the fear of Elohim was upon the cities that were all around them, and he did not pursue the sons of Jacob." This is right after Dinah had been probably, well, just taken against her will and abused in a certain way, which caused Simon and Levi to go after Shechem and his son. Tell him, "Listen, we'll intermarry with your people, but you've all got to be circumcised." And then when they all were, they went and slaughtered them all. And Jacob said, oh my goodness, right here at the end of 34 and 30, Jacob said to Shimon and Levi, "You have troubled me by making me a stench among the inhabitants of the land, among the Canaanites and the Perizzites. I am few in number. They shall gather themselves against me and shall smite me, and I shall be destroyed, my household and I." Here he is again in a bind. Somebody wants to kill him. But look at verse 5 here. "And they departed." This is after they went back to Bethel, took up all their idols and everything. "And they departed, and the fear of Elohim was upon the cities that were all around them, and they did not pursue the sons of Jacob." Again, he's delivered. Here's Bethel in the middle of it again, going back to that place of desperate. And he's delivered again, miraculously. I want to go to Hosea, which is where what I decided to share today came from, because it's the Haftorah for today. And as much as I raked and raked and raked it, this is where it came together. Look at Hosea 11, verse 1. "When Israel was a child, I loved him. And out of Mitzrayim I called my son." It's a big span there from when Israel was a child all the way to bringing him out of Egypt. But look at 7 through 12. Hosea 11, 7 through 12. It's interesting here, what we're looking at now in these prophecies is way in the future we're seeing the nation of Israel being prophesied about. And you see some of the same traits that were in Jacob. 7, "My people are bent towards backsliding from me. Though they call to the Most High, he lifts none of them up. How could I give you up, Ephraim? How could I hand you over, Israel? How could I make you like Admah? How could I set you like Zeboiim? My heart turns within me, all my compassion is kindled." I just really want to get down to verse 12 here. "Ephraim has surrounded me with lying, and the house of Israel with deceit." Ooh, where did that verse come from? "But Judah, is still wandering with El and is true to the set apart one." So here we have these prophecies that are against the house of Israel when they were split into two houses. But Judah still seems to be pretty much the southern kingdom with Yahweh. Chapter 12, verse 2. "And Yahweh has a controversy with Judah to punish Jacob according to his ways, to repay him according to his deeds." Verse 3. "He took his brother by the heel in the womb, and in his strength he strove with Elohim." That's where I really got the idea that, hey, all that wealth and all that pride was what caused him to fight God. 4, "He strove with the messenger and overcame. He wept and sought his favor." He found him in Bethel, and there he spoke to us, even Elohim. Look at 12 verse 8. And Ephraim says, "Indeed, I have become rich. I have found wealth for myself. In all my labors, they shall find in me no crookedness that is sin." By the way, Ephraim and the house of Israel are interchangeable. They're the same thing here. And you see the pride there, the riches and the pride. Jumping down to 13:1. When Ephraim spoke, there was trembling. He was lifted up in Israel, but through Baal, he became guilty, and he died. One thing that's happened before this prophecy is that Jeroboam, after the split of the kingdom, the king of Israel, Jeroboam, had set up false gods, literally golden calves again, in Beersheba, and Dan, or actually in Bethel and Dan. So we have this total turning to idols that was happening, that Israel was about to be destroyed for, and that's what this prophecy is about. But look at 13:5-6. Here's the whole point again. "I knew you in the wilderness, in the land of drought." 6. "When they were fed, they were satisfied. They were satisfied and their heart was exalted. Therefore, they forgot me." You know, when we're down and out, we're broken, he's there, we find him, we see him, and we make a vow. Anything you want. I'll never again. Well, it's interesting to me that Jacob never built that house in Bethel. Built an altar there, but Bethel became other things. He never built a house. He never built a temple like the ziggurat that he probably saw in the dream. Hosea 14:1-2. "O Israel, return to Yahweh, your Elohim, for you have stumbled by your crookedness. Take words with you and return to Yahweh. Say to him, take away all crookedness and accept what is good, and we render the bulls of our lips." You know, he calls us back to, he calls Jacob back to Bethel. "Remember me, remember that, remember then." And he calls us back to say to him, "Take away the crookedness that's in us." And we offer the praise as bulls, as sacrifices, big, expensive sacrifices. Now we offer that praise and that thanks of our lips. Look at Hebrews 13:15-16, or just let me read it. It's two verses. Hebrews 13:15. "Through him then let us continually offer up an offering of praise to Elohim. That is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name." And then back to Hosea 14:4-8. "I shall heal their backsliding. I shall love them spontaneously, for my displeasure has turned away from him. I shall be like the dew to Israel. He shall blossom like the lily, cast out his roots like Lebanon. His branches shall spread, and his splendor shall be like an olive tree, and his fragrance like Lebanon. Those who dwell under his shadow shall return. They shall revive like grain, and blossom like the vine, and become as fragrant as the wine of Lebanon. What more has Ephraim to do with idols? It is I who answer and look after him. I am like a green cypress tree. Your fruit comes from me." You know, it's so easy to trust in other things besides Yahweh, to trust in idols. Whether that's our flesh, Jacob being somewhat smart, a studied man of the tents, whether it's riches, to trust in our insurance or to trust in our wealth. Hey, we'll buy off whatever it is. No problem. We'll just spend money and do it. And we saw how that didn't work for Jacob. It's easy to trust in PowerPoint slides, graphics, skills, anything that we trust in that isn't Yahweh is an idol. And yet he says, come. Come back to me. Offer the sacrifice of your lips, praise, thanksgiving, and I will heal you and bless you unbelievably. Baruch Hashem. Please stand with me if you